You are entering the Royals Podcast Network.
A show that looks at Kansas City baseball's past, present, and future.
Belted to left field. Billy comes through tonight. Splat!
This is the Kansas City Baseball Vault.
And welcome to another episode of the Kansas City Baseball Vault. As always, we are brought to you by Kelly's Westport Inn. My name is Michael Lingle. I'm going to be in the, the theoretical host chair. It's not really a chair because we're in three different areas, but Troy's on his way to Phoenix and Surprise, Arizona to hang out at spring training for a couple days. So keep an eye on this page and whatever subscription service you're using right now to get our podcast, because he should have some audio from a few players. Just going to be basically who he runs into, who he can find, which if I'm guessing, it's probably going to be an hour and a half of Jason Adam, with the last 30 minutes being Jason Adam politely asking him to leave him alone.
So that sounds about right.
Yeah. That voice is Jeff Herr. So with Troy gone, it's just going to be Jeff and I. We don't have a guest today because we actually have some spring training results to talk about.
Thankfully, there's
actually some action. Last week, we talked a little bit about the intra-squad game, but you know, really not a lot that you can take out of that. It wasn't really a game. Now the Royals played a few games, and the disclaimer we have to throw out right now, and this is the fourth spring training we've covered on this podcast, which is kind of crazy. Spring training, it matters in some ways, but in most ways it really doesn't. The Royals last year had their best spring training ever, still finished third place in the division. You can't really take a whole lot out of the final results. I don't even know what the team's record is in spring training games right now. They're through, I think, six. It's really not a big deal as far as like how they finish. So what you're kind of looking for are really big problems that might be out there. You know, if some guy who you expect to hit just completely looks terrible, that's an issue. Or if for some reason a pitcher just can't hit the strike zone, that's something to be concerned about. But the other disclaimer is that it's also, at this point, a really small sample size because we're within, just a couple of games. Players are only getting two or three at-bats. Nonetheless, it's still pretty exciting to have some baseball, especially when it seems like in the Midwest, every other day we're getting snow and sub-zero temperatures. So, Jeff, how many games have you kind of tuned into, and have you gotten any real chance to listen to them at work in the background? I know you've got, like, blocked internet.
Yeah,
basically everywhere.
Yeah, I can't really stream any sort of radio things or any, so I'll just get notifications on my phone. And for the spring training games, they're kind of toned down. It's just kind of, it started and then I kind of get the final score, because it's not like during the season where if I miss the game, I want to be updated of all the scoring plays and all that kind of stuff. So unfortunately, I haven't been able to tune into that many. I think there was one either Thursday or Friday last week where it was a little bit later in the day and I got to listen to a little bit on my way home from work. But other than that, not too much, unfortunately.
We also are kind of limited by our observations because all we really have is what pops up on the game day. I mean, we're not in Arizona. These games, for the most part, aren't televised, and so it does kind of limit what we're able to do. So I haven't actually seen any baseball, but I've been able to listen to it, and so that's going to impact everything. So again, disclaimer, a lot of the observations are just going to be going off of what information is available right now. That being said, the Royals are scoring some runs at least, and some of the guys that you hoped would have some good spring training at bats seem to be having those. Eric Hosmer is hitting the ball pretty well. He had a couple doubles the other day. Mike Moustakas hit two homers the other day against the Cubs. Earlier today, Jorge Bonifacio was 2-for-2, hit a home run. And Johnny Giovitella is kind of scrapping all over the place, too. He's got a couple doubles, hit a triple today. It kind of made me think, what kind of timing the Royals really seem to have and the bad luck they seem to have is, what if Johnny Giovitella is actually able to hit now and possibly could have been an everyday second baseman, and now they've gone out and signed Omar Infante. So not that I'm against Omar Infante. I actually like that signing more than some people, but it would seem to be the Royals' luck for that to happen, wouldn't it?
Yeah, I mean, the Royals would – they've never been a team where things have gone according to plan, and at least in my lifetime, I should say, and they haven't been a team that gets that has options. You know, it's always this guy has to succeed at this position, otherwise we don't have anybody. In my whole life, that's the way it's been. So it would kind of be funny that they go out and they finally say, okay, we're not going to, you know, hope in one hand and you know what in the other. We're going to go out and find somebody who we know can produce on some level that's above major league average and get Infante and then pay him maybe a little bit more money than you would have wanted to pay. And then, of course, Giovitella comes up and is the player everybody thought he would be 2 years ago. So, I mean, that definitely would be Royals luck. But, you know, options are never a bad thing. So if that did happen, you know, it'd put him in a interesting scenario.
And it's worth noting that so far Infante's made it into one game. He had some tightness in his shoulder or some inflammation. So that's definitely something to keep in mind. I don't think he's made it through a season without at least one DL stint. So, you know, that's a concern, but at least it's only been like one disabled stint. So he's made usually about 145 games most of the last few seasons. And you're right, if they do have options with Giovitella, I mean, that's something that you know, could work out in their favor if they have a ready-made backup to jump in there. It's also looking like the Royals are more and more inclined to be going with two outfielders on the bench, possibly with Danny Valencia as the lone infielder, which, you know, they played him a little bit at second base. He said he's played shortstop as far as recently as high school. You know, he's never played any middle infield as a professional. So it's kind of difficult to really see him being an actual utility option. But for what the Royals want to do, I think they see Infante and Escobar as, you know, everyday guys that really aren't going to need a whole lot of days off. Escobar's only missed maybe like 8 games the last 3 years. Mm-hmm. So not much that you need to worry about there, but it is still kind of an interesting way to approach things because they seem dead set on keeping both Jerod Dyson and Justin Maxwell basically no matter what, which I'm curious about. But at the same time, Dayton Moore's come out and he said, well, the opening day roster doesn't necessarily mean that that's the roster you're going to finish with, which is correct. But at the same time, you kind of want to have an option there in case you really need them, you know, just optimizing things from the start rather than trying to play catch up later. So it's an interesting tack. You know, there's still a lot of games left. We've got about 4 weeks until the actual opener, actually 4 weeks as of today. So there's a lot of time for these things to shake out. There could be injuries. There could be guys who just play out of their mind and really just take a spot. You know, so there's a lot to kind of keep an eye on. And I guess that goes back to the same disclaimer of, you know, small sample size. It's very early in spring. There's not a lot of conclusions that you can draw right now today on March 3rd.
Yeah. And the when you talk about roster management, I mean, like you said, this early and it's kind of, you know, not even really worth talking about too much, but I think the Jerod Dyson thing is kind of interesting because from what we've seen, Jerod Dyson is basically a one-tool player. He is really, really fast. I mean, his defense is probably above average simply because he's got such good speed that he can make up for any shortcomings that he has. Yeah, I've never been super impressed with his D, but what's interesting to me about it, I'd like to get your thoughts on this, is this idea that the Royals are kind of planning for an eventuality that their resources would better be spent trying to get to that eventuality instead of planning for it. And by that I mean, so I think the Royals look at Jerod Dyson and say, this guy is a weapon when it comes to, you know, late game situations for big games, especially the playoffs. That's a kind of guy you want in your roster. And I completely agree. Jerod Dyson in the playoffs, you know, putting him in as a late inning sub when you need to try and manufacture a run or do something else like that, I mean, definitely that's a good weapon to have. But, I mean, if he's going to be on your roster and you're going to have another outfielder, it's like, I don't know how much value Jerod Dyson brings over a 162-game schedule with Maxwell also there. So it seems to me like they're planning for this kind of, we want him to be a part of this team for this X point that we're going to get to, whereas it might be better to say, hey, let's use that roster spot on a utility infielder that we can have that is going to play two or three times a week and is probably going to get a couple hundred at-bats, which is probably more than what Dyson's going to get. I don't know. I mean, do you kind of feel that, or do you think there's something else that they have in mind?
Well, they also have to keep Lorenzo Cain in mind because he's shown that, you know, it's very, very difficult for him to stay on the field. He's had just different injuries. You know, it's another year where they're saying that he is more flexible, and they think that that's going to help him, you know, keep his legs fresh and prevent injuries. You know, I don't know. I mean, in some ways, I think Kane's kind of the key to this, because if he's able to stay healthy, they might not even worry about Justin Maxwell when it comes down to it. But it's really one of those deals where I think you're right. It seems like they're carrying a platoon option on their bench, which is kind of odd. You know, I think most days you're going to have Alex Gordon, you're going to have Nori Aoki, and you're going to have Lorenzo Cain. And the other outfielders are kind of redundant. You know, you don't necessarily need them. Dyson is definitely a weapon, and he does walk pretty well. He's shown that in the minors and in a brief time in the majors. But, you know, he is kind of a guy who has to slash the ball. He's, you know, had a little bit of pop here and there, but he's definitely a guy you don't want him to be trying to get to the fences, because it's not going to work that way for him. Maxwell, that's okay. You know, you've seen the power that he had last year and, you know, just the limited time he was with the team. So Dyson really is kind of that late inning guy, which in some ways is really, really valuable, because like you said, you know, in the playoffs or in September, you know, he can jump in. And one of the ways the Royals have used him is somebody gets on base, automatically they go to draw Dyson. Usually it's Billy Butler, but it's been Mike Moustakas in some cases, and you know, maybe even in Sal Perez or whatnot. And you know you're going to have that guy on base. You know, it's like the old saying, you can't steal first. That's kind of what it is. They know if they get a guy, late game situation, they need to break a tie, they need to tie the score, whatever, they can put draw Dyson on first. He's probably going to be on second automatically. Good shot at third, and then, you know, who knows what can happen. So I think he has value. I just think that I don't know if it's that much, and I don't know how much they're going to use him if Lorenzo Cain is able to stay healthy. So it's definitely very interesting to see how that'll work out. I think if it comes down to it, they'll probably keep Dyson over Maxwell just for the defensive abilities. And I don't know, maybe my observations of him are that they try to play him too shallow in a lot of cases, and I think that he's missed a lot of opportunities to make plays that way. And I don't know if that's the Royals positioning him that way or if that's his own choices. And we can talk a little bit more about how to judge those things in the next segment. There's your teaser. But taking a look at the pitching, so far there haven't been any real disasters. Guthrie got hit a bit today, gave up a homer. Danny Duffy gave up a homer, but, you know, kind of worked out of it in his second inning. Yordano Ventura pitched pretty well, according to Jason Parks. He was hitting 100. And then he also struck out, I think it was Javier Baez of the Cubs, with an off-speed pitch, and said he just made him look ridiculous. So that's one of the top...
He's a legit prospect, too.
Yeah, he had like 37 homers in the minors last year. He's a top 10 prospect.
Real big prospect.
So, and that just goes back to what Parks has said about Ventura and, you know, what his changeup could be, especially paired with that fastball, because the way he described it was that Baez was all geared up, ready to cheat, and then he got an off-speed pitch he wasn't expecting. So that's what you're looking for from Ventura. Tim Collins had a rough day today. Chris Dwyer's had a couple good innings. You know, again, we're going off two-inning samples, so there's not much to really take a look at. But the kind of interesting thing is, going back to Duffy, is when he threw mostly fastballs, but his second most used pitch was a slider, which he really hasn't thrown all that much, pretty much as a pro. He's thrown it here and there, and he's thrown kind of a cutter before, but he hasn't really thrown the slider. He's usually been a fastball, curveball guy. If his curveball's not on, he'll go to his changeup, or if his changeup's not on, he'll rely more on his curveball. But they apparently asked him, and this is the Royals, asking a player to go with the slider instead of a curveball, which is rare on itself. They asked him to try a slider because they felt he could command it better. And, you know, he got a couple good pitches out of it. Nobody put it, you know, nobody got a hit off him with it. So that's something to really kind of keep in mind when watching Duffy, to see, A, is that going to be a pitch that he can use to maybe be more efficient? And B, is it something that he's going to use consistently throughout spring, or is it the first sign of trouble, is he going to ditch it? So I think that's something to keep in mind. And it's definitely something that could give him a leg up in going for that fifth starter competition. I think right now the Royals probably want Duffy or Ventura to be that guy, but they also seem really prepared to go with Hochaver or Wade Davis too.
I did think that was interesting that Duffy kind of starting to try new things, and it's good. And I mean, we have to kind of keep remembering that, and I think we've talked about this before, it seems like Duffy's been around forever at the major league level. Like, he should be this, you know, polished pitcher, but when you look at his experience and the innings he's pitched, and it's, I mean, relatively speaking, it's pretty low. So, you know, normally, like, you know, if you're Luke Hochaver and you're in year three and you're switching up pitches, it might be like, well, I don't know how this is going to turn out. But Duffy, you know, based on his injury history and stepping away from the game, it's something that's a little bit more encouraging, because he's still, from a developmental standpoint, he's still got some room to grow on that, which I think is nice. So that is kind of good to see him kind of try something out, because, I mean, that was his problem. Like you said, if one of those secondary pitches wasn't working, then, you know, his pitch count would start to ratchet up. So if he's got a pitch that he can control much better, then, you know, that's going to put him in a lot better position to be a starting pitcher instead of having to be in the bullpen, because then he can go the distance and go those 6-7 innings like the Royals need him to do, instead of trying to having 90 pitches by the third inning or fourth inning or whatever it was that one time, which was completely ridiculous. But so, I mean, that's encouraging. And then Rodonno Ventura, obviously encouraging as well. And one thing, too, that we heard today was John Lamb pitching for a little bit today. They said, 90 to 92 they said he was hitting?
Yeah, 90 to 92 is from, I think Josh Vernier had that. I think Jason Park saw 90 to 93. And we've also heard that he looks like he's lost some weight. So I think that was, I don't know if that was, it wasn't really reported as a factor in some of his struggles in his comeback. But, you know, I think he definitely had said in a couple of places that, you know, he didn't put in enough of the work or as much of the work as he now thinks he probably should have. So those are all really good signs, considering that John Lamb wasn't even, I don't believe he was even in the top 30 in Baseball America's Royals prospects, which he was a guy who he looked like he might be, you know, the top pitcher out of their guys back in 2011.
He was a top 20 in all of baseball that year.
Yeah.
So, I mean, that's kind of a precipitous fall for him, but I guess that's what happens when you get Tommy John. And you lose your velocity too. Yeah, I mean, he came back near the end of second half of the season in 2012, I believe it was, and you had that, and it was kind of like, okay, well, he's come back from the injury, he's only sitting at 86, 87, you know, he just needs to kind of stretch it out. And then all last year, you didn't see it tick up any at all, so it was kind of like, well, you know, some people, they get Tommy John, and they just don't come back from it, in the sense that they don't get that velocity back. You know, they either kind of reinvent themselves as a pitcher, or, you know, they don't go any further. So it's good to see him kind of get some of that back. You know, hopefully he can sustain it. And being in getting into shape after an injury is always kind of a problem, you know, for everybody, because when you're rehabbing, you're not doing your normal workout routine. You're probably trying to take it a little easy because you don't want to make things worse. And I believe was it him where he got, am I thinking of him, the writer, I might be having this confused, where he got back from Tommy John and then he injured his ankle shortly after.
Yep,
that was him. Yeah, so, I mean, stuff like that, you know, he's kind of run into a lot of bad luck there. So that could have been a factor. And, you know, he's still a young kid. I mean, when he had Tommy John, he was, what, 20, 21 years old? So, and, you know, and then he comes back and gets, you know, more injured again. So it could have been something where he just kind of got down on himself and wasn't as motivated. And, you know, those things happen. We all go through that. So it's good to see him kind of seem to be rejuvenated, rededicated, and seeing that velocity tick up is big, because if he can catch on, I think I said this in an email that we sent either, you know, early, maybe it was last week or maybe it was earlier today, I can't remember, but that's definitely one of those things where I've kind of moved on from him, but it's still one of those, I still look at it and say, okay, there's a possibility here that something could kind of come out of nowhere and catch fire with this guy, because he's always had the talent. So if he can get on the right track and come back, that, I mean, that's incredible, because he can probably move pretty quick from, you know, double A to triple A. So you could be having Danny Duffy, Yordano Ventura, Kyle Zimmer, and then if John Lamb can get it together, if you got four nice young pitchers knocking at the door, I mean, that's, in Royals terms, I mean, that's
unheard of.
So
it just doesn't happen.
I'm obviously not predicting that's going to happen, but it's encouraging. And when you think about the possibility of, you know, somebody that I think most people have kind of, like you said, not even in the baseball perspective's top, or Baseball America's top 30. So most people have written him off. So it's kind of, it'd be, for lack of a better term, just a nice bonus if he was a productive major league player.
Yep. And, you know, even some other pitching prospects, Sean Manaea tweeted that he was out on the mound and he threw to live hitters. So he threw about 20 fastballs, he said. So that's encouraging. You got to keep monitoring his health. He says he's completely healthy. So that's a good thing. And then there was an article from Jeffrey Flanagan from the Fox Sports Kansas City website where he was talking about Miguel Almonte possibly starting at double A instead of at high A. So he might even skip a level, which is very encouraging because he's a guy who, you know, he jumped up, you know, two seasons ago to become a top 10 prospect in the system. And now, you know, it seems like they really believe in his ability to adjust to new competition. Apparently his curveball is sharper. His changeup and fastball are already probably big league capable. I think Clint Scholes, or maybe it was Dave Lesky, we were emailing with them, and one of them said that he could probably fit in a bullpen today in the big leagues, which, you know, you don't want him as a reliever if he can start, but for his age, for the experience he's had, that's a pretty nice prospect to have, you know, kind of waiting in the wings behind all the other guys that you just listed off. So that's definitely encouraging as well. One other spring training note that is very, very big that we'll get to here. Actually, I'm spending way too much time. Guillermo Moda was signed to a minor league deal before, and he retired. So that's about all the time I need to spend on that. I spent more time setting it up than actually discussing it.
Enjoy the fishing.
So there we go. We're just going to take a break. We're going to come back on the other side and talk about something pretty awesome in the baseball world that's coming up ahead. So we'll see you on the other side.
Come to Spit Cup this week. We'll let the person who has the highest bar tab ride the bull. We don't have any TVs in our bar, but we make our own entertainment. Mondays, it's free cover charge to anybody with a gun rack in their pickup truck. Tuesdays, we've got $8 beer night. All domestic beers are on special for only $8. It's Spit Cup. Wednesdays is longest tobacco spit. Thursdays is foot fungus night. Friday night is jamboree night. Bring your crap kick in your 10-gallon hats. And this weekend, you get our world-famous Spit Cup girls. You get to pick which one has the most teeth. It's Spit Cup.
No love letters, talking to the wall.
Or you could go to Kelly's Westport Inn. The highest quality drinks with the lowest prices. You know what we do. Drinks, friends, plenty of TV showing sports. They've got all the basketball and all the baseball on. Live music on the weekends. The best pizza in Kansas City and fun. Kelly's has the best rooftop patio in town and is voted one of the best places in Kansas City to check out the view, if you know what I mean. And maybe make a new friend. Make the best choice for your evening entertainment, Kelly's Westport Inn. Kelly's is at 500 Westport Road in Kansas City, Missouri. Kelly's Westport Inn. Tell them the Royal Man Report sent you.
And welcome back to the Kansas City Baseball Vault. We're going to talk about some pretty interesting stuff that Major League Baseball announced this weekend. If you've listened to this show for a long time, you know, we've talked a lot about things like pitch effects. We've talked about defensive metrics. We've talked about a lot of these things. And it's going to end up being something that could really revolutionize the way all of those things are seen and the way that they're analyzed. Major League Baseball announced that they're working on a system that can produce data about pretty much everything on the field. It's pretty remarkable. That's a two-part system that uses radar and cameras that can put every fielder on every play and give them a location. When the ball is put into play, you can monitor how far a guy goes, how quickly they go, their top speed. You can check base runners. It's really pretty awesome. A couple of years ago, there was a field effects was a kind of a proprietary system that was put into place, but I don't think it was ever really fully implemented, or if it was, there just wasn't a whole lot put out about it. And that was basically taking the idea behind pitch effects, which you can see on, you know, any MLB game day, where it will tell you the speed of the pitch, it'll tell you the spin, shows you the location. Field effects would work to try to help with analyzing defense. But it wasn't perfect. There was a lot of things, a lot of problems with it. There's, you know, still, I think, you know, relativity of where a player starts and stops. It was based on a grid system rather than just a straight on path. So there were a lot of different things that didn't quite work on the initial idea behind it. But the way that they have things now, and we'll post this link on RoyalsPodcast.com. There's a video that they use to demonstrate this where Jason Hayward makes a play and you can track what the ideal path to the ball is and what his path was and how efficient it was. It'll tell you his first step speed. It'll tell you his acceleration. I mean, it's pretty amazing stuff. You know, Jeff, what was your impression on just seeing the announcement and you know, seeing the video and everything that they kind of detail in these?
Yeah, I haven't been able to dig into it too much, unfortunately, but just from what I've kind of seen, just pictures and a couple videos, I mean, it looks crazy cool. Like, just the amount data that they're able to extrapolate from just every particular play. And the part that I haven't really been able to dig into is exactly how it can be used. And so it's getting real, real deep down into the nitty-gritty, and it seems like it's a thing where you can kind of try and kind of mold your team based on even more specific skill sets. So instead of, by being able to measure how quickly someone can get or someone has to be able to get from point A to point B to cover a certain field, then you know how quick their first step has to be, and they can... this thing can measure that. So then you're looking at, okay, we've got Jerod Dyson and we've got Alex Gordon out here. Well, now we can kind of tweak the way we position them even more to guard against certain things because, you know, well, you know, we can shade Jerod Dyson a little bit more towards right field because his first step is X fast, and so to get to a certain ball, blah, blah, blah. So, I mean, that seems to be kind of where it's starting and where it could be headed to. But like I said, I haven't dug into it a ton yet, but it's really, really interesting stuff. And the only concern I have is just the amount of people who will rouse up the baseball's not played by a computer type argument. So I feel like we hear those enough, but with something like this, it's only going to be even worse. So that'll be interesting to see how that, if this really becomes more prominent, it'll be interesting to see how that plays out.
Yeah, one of the things when they posted that on Facebook, some of the comments were like, this is going to be like the blue hockey puck for the NHL from, you know, the old Fox broadcast and things like that. But I think the way that they would best use it, I think it's mostly going to be at first like an analytical thing and partially to demonstrate for highlights. I don't think they're going to break in and show every play unless it's a big one. That's my impression of kind of how they've described it. Plus, I think you're going to have the initial problems of just, you know, how the producers are going to be using it, because you do have to have the, you know, the graphical representation on the screen of, you know, what happened. It's not just the data. You have to be able to apply it to the broadcast, which I think is interesting, but I'm also its target audience. There's a really, really detailed article on Baseball Prospectus by Ben Lindbergh. And again, we're going to link this on baseball on RoyalsPodcast.com. So if you're on SoundCloud or iTunes or Stitcher, definitely go to RoyalsPodcast.com and find this episode. It's going to be posted either March 3rd or March 4th for your reference. It's pretty incredible stuff how complex they get on these things. And I think it's really another source of information. I don't think you can get too much information as long as it's relevant. And, you know, you look at what scouts measure today. They measure, you know, how fast a batter goes from home to first from either side of the plate. They measure home to second. They measure first to third. I mean, you hear about pop times for catchers all the time. So all these things are already measured in some way. So I don't know that it's going to interfere a whole lot with, you know, that element. What I think you're going to see most is that you can get a lot of this data just from, you know, actually, you know, looking at the data and how it outputs things. But I think information like this really helps clear up a lot of pictures, because I can go to the park, I can sit in the same seat, and I can watch Lorenzo Cain run down the line to first, and I can think to myself, well, that guy's fast. And then I can see Jerod Dyson and say, okay, well, that guy's fast too. But I don't always have an exact idea of how fast or how much faster a guy might be. Plus, part of the elements of this is that they're going to be able to measure base running, which is one of the more difficult things to really measure. You know, there are some ways that, like, Bill James has come up with you know, how often somebody goes first to third, or how often they score from first on a double, or things like that. But they don't really get into what this system can get into, which is, like, the angle that they take, their top speed, you know, how they hit each base and things like that. So it's taking two of the most difficult things to actually quantify in defense and base running and putting numbers behind it that I think will go hand in hand with a scout's eye to really make a better representation of what a player actually is. And I think the way that they describe it, it's going to settle some debates, but it's going to bring up other questions too. So I think it's fascinating stuff. You know, I also think that there's the potential to put some quantitative info behind a lot of terms that you hear in baseball. You hear, you know, player has good range. Well, now you can know exactly what his range is. You know, you can get it that precise. You can see how efficient somebody goes towards the ball. In the video example, Jason Hayward has like a 97% efficiency going from this ball. And it's like a division-clinching catch. So, I mean, it's all this stuff that you can really come up with. You can look at, you know, how fast is their first step, and what does that say about their instincts? You know, how quickly do they get rid of the ball in the field? You know, all these things that you can kind of measure now, they're going to be captured by radar. It's going to be captured by cameras. And you know, like I said, I just don't think that it's going to be necessarily a bad thing. I think there's going to be a resistance. I mean, there's always resistance to this kind of thing. Like you said, it's not played by a computer, so people are going to have problems with that, I think, at first.
And I think a part of the problem will be that in order to make this truly useful, it is going to be more of the, you know, analytics people on the analytics side, and it's going to have to – there's going to have to be a lot of kind of mine data from this, and there is going to be – there's a ton of potential for it. And I think as a result, you're going to see some, you know, as more people, as more information gets out there and people get more used to dealing with it, I think they're going to see more kind of crazy defensive shifts, because you're going to be able to look and say, okay, so it's such and such hitter, you know, against this type of a pitcher hits, you know, this type of a ball X number of times, and you can kind of manipulate the defensive shifts to take advantage of these things while also knowing the limits, also having a better picture of the limitations of the players. So that all sounds kind of nerdy, but people like you and me, Mike, I mean, we, you know, dig into this stuff. Like, that's really fascinating that you can kind of break that stuff down. And it's just amazing to think that we've reached a level of technology where we're, I mean, think about when radar was invented, you know, and it's just like only used for military stuff, and now we're sitting there using it for baseball and doing all these kind of analytics. Like, it's just crazy when you really think about how far we've come and how valuable this can be to something just like something as seemingly entertainment as baseball.
Yeah, and they say they're going to implement it in 3 stadiums this year and try to get it put into a bunch of others throughout the year and hopefully have it fully operational next year in 2015, which is pretty interesting. Part of the methodology that they went through, and this is in the Baseball Prospectus article about this, they took the information, they plugged it into whatever application they needed to, and then they were able to make a graphical recreation of a particular play. So where a player went on the field, how long it took a guy to go. I think you could use that for something like the game day applications where, you can see kind of what a guy's first step was, because you're just listening on the radio or you're just watching game day. Well, you don't really know. You kind of just have an idea and you're kind of at the mercy of, how they describe it. So I think that's interesting. That's probably also one of the things that I think people are probably going to be resist towards as well, because you can literally replay a game based on the data that you collect from a game. I thought about another thing that you could use this for as well, because if you're measuring things, you know what a guy's baseline is. So if you Lorenzo Cain out there and you know his first step is 0.2 seconds and his acceleration is 15.8 miles an hour or whatever, let's say that his first step is 0.3 for a couple of weeks and that acceleration goes down. Well, maybe is that fatigue or is that an injury? So maybe it'll throw out some of those things that you can kind of look at and catch early before they actually suffer an injury. Maybe you give them a couple of days off based off of that, and they'll stay healthier down the line. And it could be something that really helps in that sense, because you've got healthier players, or you've got players staying healthy and playing more games. You're getting more value out of some of those guys, even if they are, quote unquote, injury risks. So that could be another thing that the training staffs look at too. Catchers, every element. It's the coolest stuff, and I'm nerding out looking at it. I'm just watching this GIF rotate over and over of this two hopper to third that they got out of data that they picked up. I think it's the coolest thing, and I'm really excited to kind of see how it comes out. The other question is how much is going to be available to the public? We don't know. We don't know. They could easily just keep it for themselves. If it's their system, they implement it and teams want to keep it for whatever advantage, I guess I can't really blame them for that. But I want to play around with it too. So I think that's just one more thing that you can add to the fan graphs and some of the things that they've got and pitch effects and all of that. And I think, as they say, I think the future is here. And I think this is what it's going to be.
We're excited to have an exclusive interview with the new iPhone 4 assistant, Siri. Hello, Siri. How are you doing today?
Thank you. It's nice for me to be here.
Siri, you've been pretty busy with the new iPhone launch. What do you do for fun?
It's just been crazy around here. I've been looking for a place to get away and wind down, but I have not been able to find anything my style on the plaza.
Well, have you tried Kelly's Westport Inn?
I show Kelly's Westport Inn to be at the corner of Westport Road and Pennsylvania Avenue.
It's got way more than that. It's been voted by The Pitch as one of the best places to meet guys in Kansas City. It's got a great laid-back vibe, plenty of TVs to watch sports, an awesome pizza place in the back, and plenty of drink specials during the week.
You say it's a nice place to meet guys? Accessing. This sounds like the place for me. Shutting down now.
You can't shut down. If you want to meet Siri and other great Kansas Cityans, check out Kelly's Westport Inn, 500 Westport Road in beautiful, laid-back Westport. Tell them the Royal Man Report sent
and
you.
The Kansas City Baseball Vault. Again, Troy is out. Look for some sound from him. Also, Dave Lesky is going to be out in Surprise right behind Troy. So right after Troy, Lesky's taking his spot. So we should have a lot of spring training information and some good quotes and everything from some of the ball players. So that'll be something you definitely want to keep an eye on. But the last segment we're really going to talk about here is, it's baseball. And baseball,
very important.
It's the most vital. It's probably bigger than the Inte deal. It's bigger than Vargas. It's probably the biggest thing that the Royals have done in the last 4 years. So important to baseball. It's such a big part of it. And the Royals are changing a tradition depending on how you feel, either the best thing or worst thing. I think we're in agreement this is the best thing in the world.
I would agree, yes.
All right. That is that the Royals are, at least they're saying that they're going to get rid of Garth Brooks singing Friends and Leases in the sixth inning. Is, oh my, probably going to get some flames from this, but it's the most obnoxious song in the world. And that's the last thing I want to hear at a baseball game. I don't know what your thoughts are, if they're as potentially inflammatory as mine, but oh boy, I hate that song.
You know, I don't even mind the song. To me, it's just that it's so forced. Like, you know, and they've said, oh, you know, it's kind of like the KC version of Sweet Caroline they play at the Red Sox game. It's like, you know what? No, it's not. And it doesn't have to be. It's not a bad thing. Just because the Royals don't have a sixth inning song that everyone gets up and sways and sings along with, that's okay. That doesn't have to happen, you know. So that's what bothers me the most about it, is it feels so forced, and there's no real reason behind it. I mean, I guess there's some slight Garth Brooks connections to the area. I think his mom's from around the area somewhere, like the Kansas, Missouri area, I think. And he obviously had the big Sprint Center thing, and for whatever that matters, you know, when it first opened, and he had the 9 straight shows because we kept selling out. So, and he's got the video in front of it where he's got the Royals jersey on and it's personalized. And I mean, that's kind of cool, I guess, but it just, if they would play like every once in a while or something, you know, maybe if it was a really close game and you kind of wanted to get the crowd back into it or something, I don't know, you know, that might be a little bit different, but every time it's just annoying. And I don't like it.
So would you rather they replace it with something else or just scrap it altogether?
Just scrap it. I mean, when I was growing up, I didn't remember having some big deal sixth inning song. So, you know, it didn't take away from my experience at all. And I can sure as hell promise it doesn't add anything, at least in its current iteration. So I just assume not do it. I mean, if you want to play a song, then go ahead, you know. But and it's usually like probably the third inning where they have the jukebox where you get the three options and whoever cheers the loudest gets it. And it's, you know, usually some Lady Gaga song or something stupid like that. You know, I mean, if you want to do something like that, go for it. But trying to force some sort of wannabe, galvanizing song, it just flat out doesn't work. Let's be honest with ourselves here.
And for all the songs they could have chosen to be that galvanizing song, is this song about being, I don't know.
Yeah.
My opinion is Kansas City is a major area. Hoffman Performing Arts Center, which was named as one of the best performance halls in the world, not just America, in the world. You've got, you know, Westport, which has so much history. You've got the Nelson Adkins. You know, there's so many other things that you could push that are very Kansas City. And I don't see Garth Brooks as being that. I mean, take a look, go up on top of the World War I Memorial, look out over that skyline, and tell me that that needs a Garth Brooks. No, that needs, I don't know, at least jazz if they're going to do something. City, you know? That. You know, I've thrown a lot of, like, ironic choices just because I think it's pretty ridiculous, too. I think it's, I'm glad on, or at least going on, they say they're going to vote on it over a bracket style kind of thing. So I don't know how that's going to work. It's very possible that Friends in Low Place gets on that bracket and runs the table anyway. And then I think we're stuck with it at the point.
When I heard that, it made me think of the face of MLB where you had the Eric Sogard versus David Wright. Was that who it was? And, you know, at the night before the last day for voting, Sogard was winning. And then you wake up and it's like, oh, all of a sudden David Wright has taken back the lead, just barely, by like 1%.
All the hashtags were from Japan.
Yeah, it seems a little suspicious. So as soon as I heard, you know, bracket style, whatever, I was like, man, they either want one of two things. They're either trying to have some sort of, they either know that we don't like this song and we raise a stink about it. And so they're going to
find a way to make it win and then just point to it and be like, see, the fans wanted it. We're just giving the fans what they want. Or they're going to use it as some sort of cheap excuse to not say they're giving in to the fans, but allow the fans to choose something else. And then it ends up being that stupid Royals song by Lord. And
you're going to be in the same position in 2 years anyway when nobody remembers that song. That is. They just need to, I don't know, they just need to make something cool and just stick it. Or just scrap it. I think they used to use Minnie the Moocher. Why not use that? Yeah. I mean, what's wrong with that? Or use Charlie Parker. Use Benny Moten. Use some of those guys. I don't think you need to use Garth Brooks. So.
Agreed.
Or, I don't know, Bruce Chen singing karaoke. You could do that.
You know, if Bruce Chen was singing Friends in Low Places, now there we'd have
that's
a different...
That's different, yeah.
That's something I would want to see.
So, Tony Cook, I hope you're listening. If it has to be Friends in Low Places, at least have it be Bruce Chen and probably Tim Collins and singing backup. Just because I think that...
Yeah, you know, get a little quartet or something. Throw your Donna Ventura in there, you know, Salvador Perez maybe. He's got a singing voice, right? I mean, we could be onto something here. We should do PR for the Royals.
And then you can market it. It'd be like the Super Bowl Shuffle.
Boom.
There you go.
Royals are winning the World Series because of what we just did right here and now, Mike.
Changing the world, changing baseball, every week.
Podcast at a time.
Yep, one podcast at a time. All right, I think that's enough damage for today. Thankfully there's more baseball. The opening day is going to be the 31st, so it's this month, and hopefully it's not snowed out in Chicago or another in Detroit when they open up. And then the home opener is going to be on April 4th in Chicago, and tickets are really expensive, but if you can get them, I would say go ahead and get them, because I think opening day is always kind of pretty cool. But until then, we're just going to keep talking about spring training. Troy should be back next week. And like I said, look out for that spring training audio coming from both Troy and Dave Lesky. And we will get back to you next week. Once again, follow us on Twitter, KC Baseball Vault. And until next week, go Royals.
You have been listening to a Royals Podcast Network presentation.
Bleh. Didn't know how to land that one.
Yeah, you got it. You got it. It was a little...
Another little
rough, but we got it.
Another award-winning ending.
There we go.
Never leave again, Troy. Thank you.